Chapter 4. "There you are," Boba hisses, scrambling down one of the trees growing up through the covered part of the walkway. "I was looking all over for you, but those jerks in your gang wouldn't tell me anything." "Of course they wouldn't," Han says, annoyed. But at least he stops, soaked through but apparently unbothered by it. "They got scared and left me in the swamp." Boba stops, frowning. That's not exactly surprising, given that gangs aren't usually nice. The White Worms have a reputation for pettiness, but the fact that Han is here means he managed to survive, at least. "You're okay?" he asks, looking Han over. Because he saw all the signatures John was worried about. There were a lot of them, and knowing that there are monsters out there where Han was pretty much abandoned makes him contemplate tossing a few thermal detonators into the White Worm gang's ship. He can do it without getting caught. Jango made sure of that. "I'm fine," Han says, like it's a challenge, and looks away. The tips of his ears are red. "What do you want?"
"You still have to help me," Boba reminds him. "With my dad and the Jedi, remember? And being around him and Jango will keep the smugglers from grabbing Han again, even if that's just a side benefit. I said I'd help you meet him if you did."
"I don't need your help anymore," Han says, smug. "John saved me when that monster attacked, and he's going to take me with him when he leaves. I get to stay with the Jedi. You can't beat that." Boba scoffs, not letting himself dwell on the lack of leverage. "It's fine. A bounty hunter never lets on when he's lost the advantage. That's what Jango always says."
"I don't need to beat it. My dad has a ship and John doesn't, right? So if he likes John, he can take you off planet. And you get to meet Jango Fett."
That, at least, sways Han. Boba can see him wavering, frowning a little as he mulls it over. "But doesn't your dad hate Jedi?" he asks suspiciously.
"Yeah, but he likes this one," Boba says, confident that he's right.
"His dad didn't shoot John as he was leaving the ship, and when he got back after the rain started, he was all broody and thoughtful. So clearly he didn't shoot him in the swamp either."
"Yeah, well, he's really cool, so who wouldn't?" Han mutters. And then eyes Boba.
"Did you know Jedi can turn into ghosts?"
Boba blinks.
"What?" he asks, confused.
"Ghosts?"
"Yeah," Han says, and he's smug about this, too. It makes Boba scowl at him. "The monster tried to hit him with its tail, and it just went through." Excitement curls in Boba's chest, and he grins.
"Really?"
he asks delightedly. "I saw him teleport, but he can turn intangible?
That's definitely not a thing most Jedi can do.
Boba would have heard about it."
"He can teleport?"
Han demands.
"But he made a log float to get us back to town. Why wouldn't he just teleport if he knew how?"
Boba shrugs, not about to question how Jedi work. Zam Wessel was telling him about ones with weird powers, and Boba hadn't thought she was telling the truth, but clearly she was. "It's really cool. Mandalorians are the strongest warriors in the galaxy, but maybe Jedi are a close second. Besides, John being able to do all these things will definitely distract Jango. Probably make him more agreeable when he gets a date out of it or a fight. So when Boba talks about pawns, he won't be so stubborn. Maybe Boba should be worried about his dad going up against someone who can teleport and phase through things, but Jango's the best bounty hunter in the known universe. He'll be fine. And John is dangerous, but Boba's got a read on him. He won't kill Boba's dad, no matter what he says. For Boba's sake and for Jango's. Because he feels guilty for Galadron, Boba is sure. He saw that clearly." Han huffs, but he sits down on the bench that wraps around the tree and doesn't protest when Boba drops down next to him.
"It's dumb that John doesn't have a ship," he mutters. which is more or less agreement with the whole plan, so Boba grins. I think Jedi aren't allowed to own things, he says, wrinkling his nose, because he remembers his dad mentioning something about that. So he doesn't have to own it, just borrow it, Han retorts. But he swings his legs, glancing at Boba sidelong. Why are you trying to make your dad date a Jedi? Maybe, in some small part of Boba's brain, there's the hope that John will look at him, tell him he has force powers, and teach him how to teleport too. But Boba isn't about to say that, and especially not to Han. It's not logical, and a Mandalorian shouldn't want to be a Jedi. Boba doesn't, though. He just wants to be able to do cool things without a jetpack. Because I'm trying to distract him, he says. Long enough to get him to agree with something, because once he agrees, he can't take it back. It's the law. Han frowns, like this is an impossible statement to understand. Why does Jango Fett care about laws? He asks. He's a bounty hunter. Boba rolls his eyes. Not Republic laws, he says. Mandalorian laws. Hesitates for a moment over what to say, but Han is a co-conspirator, so telling him should be fine as long as Boba leaves out the details. I'm a clone, he says, maybe a little quietly. But Han is the first person he's ever told. A clone of my dad, and there are more clones too, but I was the first one, and I'm the only one Dad calls his son. And it's not fair, because they're my little brothers, and I have to look out for them. Dad should call them his sons, too, because he's done everything that Mandalorian law says a parent should do, but he won't even think of them as people. But that's not your problem, is it? Han asks, giving Boba a faintly wary look. He thinks you're a person, and he's training you, and you're definitely his son, so what does it matter? It matters, Boba tells him, annoyed. They're my brothers. They call me Big Brother, and they're Mandalorian, and they should be more to Dad than just clones. It twists in his stomach sometimes, the thought that his dad looks at pawns and the other clones and doesn't see people, just tools made to look like him. And he knows, without a doubt or hesitation, that his dad loves him. But sometimes Boba has to wonder if that will ever change. If someday something will shift, and then Jango will look at him and not see a person either. It scares him in ways it probably shouldn't. But Boba can't help it, even when he thinks he should know better. They're really that important? Han asks, and when Boba glances over, he just looks confused, a little wary, like this is something he suspects he should know but doesn't. Boba blinks at him, confused by the question, and Han shrugs, looking away. He kicks his heels hard against the side of the bench and says, "If the white worms were in trouble, I wouldn't help them. I'd just make sure I was okay." "Really?" Boba asks, not entirely sure how to take that. None of them? What about your dad or your mom? Han scowls and kicks his feet harder. I don't have one, he says, and then abruptly, so what do you even need my help with? Your dad already likes John, so it's fine, right? The change in subject isn't one Boba wants to accept, but he's pretty sure Han isn't going to talk about anything else, so he grudgingly allows it. Yeah, but he doesn't know he likes him. I'm going to make him realize it. How? Han asks, wary. And what if John doesn't like him? John likes him already. Boba is mostly sure of that. It doesn't really matter, though. He just needs Jango distracted enough to give in and admit that the clones are his sons, even offhand, because then Boba will officially have several million little brothers. Besides, I'm not going to force them to do anything. I just want them to spend time together. Han relaxes a little. Oh, he says. Like on dates? Yeah, Boba grins. John owes me and my dad dinner, So when he brings it over, you're going to help me set them up to have it alone.
There's a moment of consideration. Then, bright and quick, Han grins back.
Like playing distraction, he says confidently. I can do that.
Boba has a plan and it's definitely gonna work. He's sure of it.
Are you sure this is all right? John asks, maybe a little doubtfully, as he eyes the ship they're approaching.
Of course, Boba says confidently. He likes the bird dish a lot, and extra spicy is better.
That isn't anywhere close to what John meant, but it's clear enough that Boba doesn't understand John's hesitation. So he strangles a sigh and follows Boba around the bend of the path towards Slave One. The back of his neck prickles, and he has no idea why he agreed to do this, rather than simply buying Boba and Jango's food and sending it back with the boy. But Boba insisted that he should eat with them, and given that Han acts like a feral cat and gets offended whenever John tries to feed him, John's learned it's better to make himself scarce around mealtimes. If Han seeks him out, he's allowed to buy food for them, but otherwise it ends with a huffy Han and moody eating. Bringing dinner to the man he kissed just over 24 hours ago is potentially not the best way out, though. All right, John allows, and pauses at a safe distance while Boba disarms the defenses with a few taps at his comm. There are crates of supplies waiting to be loaded, and the ship's ramp is down, gleaming in the bright sun. The rain cleared up overnight, but it left everything with a washed, clean brightness, and the tiny port isn't an exception. Dad should be back soon, Boba says and sits down on the ramp, carefully settling the bags of food beside him.
John's last memory of Jango is being thoroughly pinned to the wall, expecting to get stabbed and instead getting kissed within an inch of his life. His mouth still burns like he can feel the imprint of Jango's lips there, or the press of his broad body. He hasn't been kissed in, well, a long time. The life John leads doesn't allow for such things, but he certainly hasn't been kissed like that in many, many years, if ever. Pulling his hood forward farther to hide his face, John vaults on top of one of the crates, crossing his legs beneath himself and settling. He feels twitchy, uncomfortably so. And it's not a reaction to danger, because he could deal with that easily, but John doesn't know if he should be here. Jango kissed him, but that doesn't mean he has any desire to be reminded of it. He'd certainly left quickly enough once the rain started. And he hadn't looked back. It's possible he considers the whole thing a mistake, and John showing up again, especially in the company of his son, will just make things worse.
What's it like? Boba asks, suddenly enough to make John twitch.
When he raises his head, Boba is watching him curiously, and he looks so much like his father that it's almost unnerving. When John freezes, not entirely sure where this line of questioning is going, Boba rolls his eyes and says,
"The Jedi Temple, the place where the kids the Jedi find grow up."
"The crash," John says automatically, and then hesitates. "I wouldn't know," he offers after a moment. "My master found me and raised me without ever sending me to the temple."
"Oh,"
Boba says and grins, digging into one of the fried tubers in the bag.
"Like a Mandalorian. She decided you were hers, so she raised you to be just like her."
John's throat closes up, and for a moment he can't breathe. "No," he wants to say, "not like a Mandalorian at all." Because in Mandalorian culture, children are a precious thing, and taking a child on means something that it didn't to Dark Woman. Dark Woman did want to raise him to be just like her, but not the way Boba means it. He curls his fingers around his forearm, breathing in, breathes out a moment later.
letting the press of unease and old fear and remembered pain slide out into the encompassing force, and shakes his head. "Not quite," he says. "I had potential, and she wanted to explore that. Wanted to see," Nico has says, "what could be made of a Jedi raised completely outside the temple, started from a young age with her own training methods." But Nico hates Dark Woman almost as much as he does Dooku, and John is never entirely certain whether to believe what he claims. "Is that why you can do weird things?" Boba asks, glancing up at him. "She must know even more, Boba!" John jerks, wrenching around to face Jango where he stands at the edge of the landing pad. He's looking at his son, gaze pointed, but his eyes flicker to John for a brief moment, sweep down from his hood to his boots, and John suddenly can't breathe for more pleasant reasons. "What?" Boba asks, annoyed, and Jango sighs, rueful. "Leave it alone," is all he says, stalking forward to drop a box of parts at Boba's side. "You con him into feeding you?"
"And you,"
Boba says, unrepentant, and shoves another tuber in his mouth.
"We went to that one food stall you liked."
"There better be that red stuff in that bag," Jango warns, but he's smiling a little, and Boba huffs.
"It smells bad," he says.
Like, that isn't exactly what he got Jango. "What's that matter to you? You're not the one eating it."
"Yeah, but I have to smell you eat it."
John can't quite manage a chuckle, but he ducks his head to hide the edge of a smile that wants to show. Here's an annoyed sound. "Quit laughing, Jedi," Jango warns, "or I'll give him up to you and you can deal with him." "It's John," he says, mild, and lifts his head, meeting Jango's eyes. "And if you give him to me, I'll corrupt him with my Jedi ways, inner peace and self-knowledge and control." "Control, was it?" Jango asks, still watching him, and John has half a second of confusion before the words truly register. Heat flashes through him, and he ducks his head a little, letting the edge of his hood hide most of his face. "Jedi prize it highly."
"Like sniping, right?"
Boba asks, oblivious, and leans over to poke at the box of parts. Apparently satisfied, he glances up, then says,
"John got food too. He can eat with us, can't he, Dad?"
"When did you adopt a Jetty?" Jango asks, sounding annoyed. He reaches down, scuffing Boba's hair, and then glances at John. Over the sound of Boba's protests, he asks, "No kid?" John hums. "I think he's laying traps for the White Worm members who left him in the swamp." Jango snorts, then tips his head. "He can stay, but he's not coming on the ship," he warns Boba, who rolls his eyes but nods.
"Fine, Dad." "Boba!"
Han's voice. John raises his head, turns quickly, and is entirely startled to find Han standing at the edge of the planking that leads back towards town. He's waving urgently, and John rises with a frown, leaping down from the crates. Before he can take more than a step, though, Boba is up on his feet and bolting past him, headed right for Han. They practically crash together, and Han is grinning like he's just gotten away with something, grabbing Boba's arm and pulling. Boba spares half a second to turn back towards his father and wave, but then they're off, scrambling down the walkway and around the bend. John hadn't even been aware that Han knew Boba. There's a long moment of silence, and then a quiet snort. "I think we've been abandoned," Jango says, and picks up the bag of food. He looks through it, then steals a tuber and approaches to set it on the crate between him and John. Gaze steady. John breathes through the memory of Jango pressing him into the wall, Jango's mouth on his skin. It's harder than it should be. Hun has my room key, he says. They'll probably prefer that to listening to us talk. Is that what we're going to be doing? Despite the words, Django sorts through the containers, opening them and checking the contents. The sight of the one Boba picked for him makes him smile a little, quick and crooked. He pulls it out, then leans back against the crates to start eating. John isn't sure whether that means Django wants to pick a fight or kiss him again, but he hopes it's the latter. Attraction in more than a passing sense isn't something common, but it makes his heart beat a little quick, makes him extra aware of himself and of Django, and it's not unpleasant. He glances at Django, wondering which way he's going to take things, and then decides that he can simply find out later. For now, a meal shared is enough. And he pulls himself back up onto the crate, crossing one leg and letting the other dangle as he finds his own meal. Thought you'd be the type to live on the blandest food you could find, Django says, eyeing the fiery green sauce cloaking the vegetables. Bread and water and all that, or protein rations. John keeps his eyes on his food. Rations travel well, he says, but I like real food too. A lot of his time is spent out in wild territory, and he tries to keep his time in towns to a minimum. He's cooked plenty of his own food over the years. Django grunts, apparently accepting that. So, who is your master? He asks abruptly. Someone I would have heard of? John doesn't know what to say. He stares blankly at his meal for a moment, weighing his response. Dark Woman is one of the most dangerous Jedi in the Order, and John knows that better than anyone. She taught him, after all, groomed him to follow in her steps, but separate, apart from the Order, able to operate alone and then vanish again, rarely communicating with any other Jedi. She's not like that, though, has ties to council members and still goes on missions for them. She would be easier to find than John if Django was out to kill her. But Django hasn't given any indication that he wants to hunt down one old spy, regardless of her skills. John assesses the edge of his desperate loyalty to the woman who taught him, roughly equal to his fear of her, and then closes his eyes, breathing out. He'll defend Dark Woman if he has to, even if it means facing Django. But he hopes it won't. She doesn't have a name, he says. And when Django shoots him a narrow look, he shakes his head. Truth, Master gave it up a few years after she was knighted, in a show of her devotion to the Force. She truly possesses nothing, not even herself. But some people call her the Dark Woman. For a long moment, Django doesn't move. Haven't heard of her, he says finally, suspicious. Most people don't, John says. That's how she likes it. Django's grunt is on the edge of disgust. Spies, he says, and takes another bite. Bounty hunters, John says, perfectly mild, and doesn't let himself do more than raise a brow when Django gives him a dark look. He picks at his food, taking a few more bites, and tries not to dwell on the near future, what's coming. There are prickles down his spine, something unsettled that sunk its claws into his nerves. Not just Django, but his presence and the confusion it brings certainly doesn't help. Found any more monsters? Django asks after a few long minutes of silence. When John glances up at him, he's looking away, gazed fixed on the swamp beyond the edge of the landing pad. With evening settling in, the shadows are thick and visibility is poor, except in certain lines of sight. John likes the press of trees, the colonnades of them from certain angles, the age of the whole place and the connectedness of it as it grows and changes, like one single organism. But he certainly understands Django's clear unease with everything. To a hunter, it looks like a trap. "No," he says quietly. "I went looking for the pair of Vornskers this morning, but only found where they'd made kills. There were strange tracks in the swamp, though. I think it might be the warworm." Django pulls a face, setting his empty container aside. "The Sith never figured out the best way to kill a Jedi was just to grab a slug thrower," he says, disgusted. "Likely, because it could easily be the best way to kill a Sith as well," John points out, amused despite himself. "The Mandalorians overall have no special connection to the Force, no abilities beyond those of their species. But they've never hesitated to go up against the Jedi, even for a moment. There's something admirable in that, even if John wished they wouldn't." Django's mouth curves, and he looks at John, gaze sliding over him with an almost tangible weight. And John abruptly feels too warm, too aware of himself. He lets his hood fall forward, focuses on keeping his hands steady, and doesn't let himself look up, even when Django says, "But it wouldn't kill you." "It might," John says simply. He knows his own limits. "From a distance, without warning, I'd be caught off guard like anyone else." A flicker of uncertainty makes him pause, and he considers for a moment, weighing the idea. "What?" Django asks, eyes narrowed. "That healing you do, it's not automatic?" "No," John allows, "but there are instincts a Jedi can cultivate to be aware of things around them. You would have to be very far away and very calm." Django makes a sound of irritation, and a moment later there's a hand on John's knee, a tight grip sliding up his thigh. John sucks in a startled breath, jerking his head up just in time for Django's fingers to catch the edges of his hood. He shoves it back, and John's heart is somewhere high in his throat, but he still doesn't move. "You always go around telling bounty hunters how to kill you?" Django demands, and the drag of his fingers over John's nape makes John contain a shiver. "You asked," John says, and the hand on his thigh tightens, pulls. Clumsily, John drops his food to the side, then shifts, and when Django drags him forward to the edge of the crate, he has room to step right between John's legs. John catches his shoulders, wary, uncertain what he's allowed to touch. But there's muscles beneath his hands, a lack of concealing armor. Django is warm, and the grip of his hand around the back of John's neck is firm enough to spark heat all up and down John's spine. "I'm a bounty hunter, in case you missed that." Django eyes him like he's assessing, weighing, and John tries not to shiver at the look, the heady sort of want he can feel like another weight against his senses. It's sharp, almost angry, but there is a genuine heat to it, a touch of challenge and desire that can't be faked. "Believe me, Django," John says, and it rasps in his throat. "I didn't." With a sound of rough amusement, Django pulls him down, kisses him hard. The angle is awkward, and John is bent almost double. But Django doesn't let up, holds him in place, and deepens the kiss and presses his lips apart to tangle their tongues. It makes John shiver, and he can't help the soft sound that breaks from him as Django's fingers drag over the inside of his leg, high up on his thigh. They trace lazy circles, just enough pressure to make John want to squirm as they inch higher, and he tugs at Django's shoulders instinctively, pulls him in another bare inch. "You're gonna give me a crick in my neck," Django says, pulling back. And before John can do more than blink, there are hands on his hips, a sharp tug. He jerks and tightens his grip on Django's shoulders again as he's dragged right off the crate. But Django doesn't drop him. His hands hook under John's thighs, and he shoves him up against the metal, pinning him there. John gasps, and Django smirks against his lips, slanting his mouth over John's in a slow, teasing kiss. "Like that?" he asks, and John curls a leg around the back of his thigh, wraps his arms around Django's neck, and drags him into another, deeper kiss, hungry for that sharp humor, wanting the way that Django wants him. It's been a very long time, and John wants to. Slowly, carefully, Django lets him slide down, and John catches himself, back still pressed to the crate. Django curled over his body. Hands slide up beneath his tunics, palms flattening against the skin, and Django makes a low, intent sound as John's sash pulls away. He drags it free, drops it at their feet, then shoves John's cloak off to follow it. "How many damn layers do you need?" he asks, and John tries not to laugh, tangles his fingers in dark hair and tips his head back as Django's mouth skims his throat. "Enough to make sure you're committed," he says, and Django laughs, setting his teeth against John's skin. "If I find a chastity belt under here, I'm gonna dump you in the swamp," he says, and John rolls his hips against Django's, lets Django feel the way he's getting hard, hears the ragged sound Django makes in response. Django is half hard already, and John wants his mouth on him, or Django inside of him, or all of it, and can't even begin to think what he wants most. "Jedi aren't celibate," he says, and can't help a hiss as Django sucks a mark into his throat, rolls the skin between his teeth, and then lets go, mouth sliding up to kiss the underside of John's jaw. John shudders, hands twisting in his hair, trying to pull him closer as Django grinds their cocks together. "Good thing for me," Django murmurs, fingers sliding under the waistband of John's pants, stroking over sensitive skin. John jerks, shuddering, and catches Django's wrist, then pulls him around, presses him up against the crate, then drops to his knees right between Django's boots. The sound of Django's curse makes him smile, and he traces his hands up Django's legs, touch just light enough to tease. "It will be," he says, and leans in, kissing his stomach, the edge of a hip bone. Django breathes out another curse, ragged Mandoa, and then his hands are in John's hair, twisting tight. With careful fingers, John pushes up his shirt, and Django agreeably lets go of him long enough to strip it off, toss it to the side. Then one hand is back in John's hair, the other cupping his jaw as a thumb presses over his lips. John doesn't hesitate. He opens his mouth, takes Django's finger in, and lets Django press his thumb against his tongue, sucks at it lightly in a mimicry of what he really wants. And Django's breath shudders out of his lungs. He pulls John's head back by the hair, watching with dark eyes as John moans at the tug, at the tight grip, at the way Django holds him still and just watches. "Criff," Django mutters, and lets go of John's jaw, pulling his thumb free. He smears it across John's mouth, pressing on the scar that edges over his bottom lip, and then drags him forward. John goes eagerly, kissing the start of the trail of dark hair leading down, pressing open-mouthed kisses to Django's stomach, his ribs, the curve of his hip where his pants rest low enough to reveal it. Django lets him explore, and the hitches of his breath, the tightening of his fingers whenever John finds a sensitive spot are like a reward, something to wring out of him. It's been a long time since John has allowed himself something like this. Longer still since he's wanted it as much as he does now. But he likes it. Likes the strain of Django's body as he tries not to move. The desperate curl of his hand in John's hair. His hips hitch just a little whenever John grazes his cock. And John thinks of that cock in his mouth, Django thrusting into his throat, and has to strangle a groan as his hands go tight on Django's thighs. Django's cock is hard, a clear line in his pants, thick and hot, and John dips lower, presses his mouth to it through the heavy fabric, and hears Django's moan, smiles a little, pleased, and kisses it gently, dragging his lips up the covered curve of the shaft as he reaches for the button, undoes it. Behind him, something huge and dark and looming takes a step and growls.